The following podcast is a production of Commercial Connections Magazine, the official publication of the CCIM Institute. For more on the latest trends, best practices, and continuing education in all areas of the industry, visit our website at ccim.com and sign up for our education e-newsletter. Support for Commercial Investment Real Estate Podcast comes from RE/MAX Commercial, your access to a world of commercial real estate. Join us to explore the global landscape, empowering entrepreneurs with the freedom to grow and guided by industry experts to help you achieve your investment goals. For more information, visit remaxcommercial.com. Welcome to another episode of CCIM Connections Podcast. I'm Bo Barron, CCIM. In this episode, I spoke with Evelyn Ward, CCIM, who is Vice President with Transwestern, responsible for agency leasing for office product, as well as tenant and owner-user representation. She's also a 103 instructor for the CCIM Institute and a great friend. In this episode, we talk about the office market, vacancies, and the future of the sector. So, Evelyn, we've been friends for 5 years now. Do you realize that?
Wow.
5 years. Evelyn and I met in what we used to call charm school as we were both becoming instructors in 2019. And the thing I remember most about you, Evelyn, is you knew everything. Like, I had been out of the industry for probably about 6 years, and I'd just come back. I started doing brokerage again. I was in the process of running the company that my dad still owned. And so I was becoming an instructor, but I hadn't been that involved in the Institute. And, you know, it wasn't an hour after I met you that I realized you knew everybody, you knew what they were like. And so I remember for the next couple of years, like anytime I had a question about anybody or like how things worked, like I was always calling you, like, please fill me in on what's going on. Like, do I want to associate with this guy or not, or this person or whatever? And you had the goods on everybody. It was so impressive. So thank you for all your help with that.
I'm like the godmother. The CCIM godfather, godmother, whatever.
That's right. You just know. So for all those listening out there, if you have a question, Evelyn normally knows the answer, especially when it comes to office. And that's why I'm excited to have you on the podcast today, is that's what you do. You do office in Houston, Texas. And so as we jump off, I'd love for you to kind of give us an overview of where you see office nationally right now. Like in the headlines, if you just read, it sounds like office is just being crushed everywhere. And I know that's true in some places, but you know, from your vantage point as somebody who's in office every day, this is your specialty. This is where you work. Like, where do you see the market right now for office?
Well, thanks for the kind intro, Bo. I hope I don't get myself in trouble. Then I know all the skeletons in the closet.
I did not mention that you knew where the bodies were buried.
So. Office is everybody's favorite sector to dog on. And it has been since COVID. You know, for lack of a better term, COVID taught us quite a bit about the value of office, but it also told us more about where companies fit in the lives of their employees and how it is going to be necessary to keep their employees engaged from both the perspective of productivity, but also loyalty. That seemed to have cropped up too. And what's happening that I see on a national level is those cities in the United States that have depended on public transit. So take a Chicago, take a New York. They have been the ones to suffer most on this side of COVID and for their office markets. And why is that? I think the number one issue to point to is safety. If employees have to live further away in order to afford the rent, then it takes them longer to get in the city. And if they have the option to not have to come in due to crime or whatever else, cost associated time, then 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to take it. And that's what we're seeing nationally. Now there's a, you know, a little bit of a different twist when you look at, for instance, San Francisco. And San Francisco's market has been hit especially hard, but for different reasons. And it disincentivizes people in the same manner, or employees in the same manner, to come into town. You know, pivoting to Houston office, which is what I know best, is we, like most of Texas cities, are very spread out. We're dependent on our own vehicles to get where we're going. Sure, we do use mass transit, and the submarket within Houston that does depend most on it is, as you might guess, CBD or downtown. And they're the ones that are right now, you know, they're not struggling the most, but they're probably second on the list with the highest vacancy. And it's because of that distance to the employees that they used to serve. And, you know, there's been over the past, well, I guess it's four years now, if we're counting on when COVID hit, right? We've seen a right sizing happen across the board. You know, tenants, some were downsizing by half, some were downsizing by less, more, give or take. And certainly there is more space on the market now than there was pre-COVID, but Houston was doubly hit. Houston was first hit when there was an energy downturn. Regardless of how much we want to diversify our economy here, we are still very tied to the oil and gas industry. Now, what's changing about that is that the oil and gas industry itself is changing, in that you have the clean fuels and hydrocarbons, and we want to be the mecca of that because that provides longevity. It also provides technology. There's other added. The medical side of things, you know, the biomed has been huge here, and we want to be a hub for that as well. There are obviously office users for that. But at the end of the day, we are a city whose office market, for the majority, so let's say 70%, was built in the 80s. That comes with its own set of challenges. And, you know, what's interesting, you know, speaking of today being the Great American Eclipse, right? And sort of a once in a lifetime, or maybe once in every 20 years kind of thing. I can say that there's a stat that was just released on the heels of this being our first quarter ending a week ago. Right now in Houston, there is nothing, no new construction happening for office space. And that is a phenomenon. It won't last, much like the eclipse, right? But it tells us that anything that's getting done is taking that much longer, which means, and then the spread between the new product to deliver and what's here is so big that a tenant's really got to be ready to pony up, really gaining some incredible efficiencies by going into a new building in order to pay that tab.
This raises some questions in my mind. One is, when was the last time that was true about Houston? Like, is that an anomaly?
It is definitely an anomaly. So I've been in Houston doing office for 13 and a half years. This is the first time in my tenure that there's been no new construction. And what's unique about this is our last push of construction, or really glut of it, was from 2010 to 20, I guess it kind of stopped in 2014, I'd say. And it added 10% new supply into our market. So we're roughly, I mean, if you do the math on it, we are roughly a, you know, 300 million square foot market. Some would maybe call it, you know, 200 million. It just kind of depends on if you're counting owner occupied office space or not. But long story is shorter is you saw such a huge glut of space delivered, but all these oil and gas producers take down space defensively because they don't want their next competitor to get it. So what was it left with? We had this sublease hangover that hit us square in the jaw pre-COVID. So 2017, 2018, we're just trying to slug our way through it. So we got two bruises as part of this whole, you know, COVID plus energy downturn.
If new supply is taking so long to reach the market, there's no new construction right now. What is that doing to rents if you have all this sublease hangover, as you called it? You have the effects of COVID. I'm assuming that vacancies are still up over your long-term averages. So what does that actually mean for rents right now in Houston?
Yeah, so it's an interesting phenomena, and I can't answer your question easily because what's happening here in Houston may be indicative of what's happening or what will happen as almost a domino effect nationwide. And what that is there is good ownership that's well capitalized, that has plenty of runway on their loan and can make the capital calls and can fund what's needed versus the ones who can't do jack. And we have seen it played out in this market in the last, especially the last 12 months, where you've got some serious movement. So you've got tenants that are looking to take down, you know, 4, 5, 6 floors of space. And there's a large campus here in Houston that went back to a special servicer, and they're just raking the cash off. They're just looking forward to that asset management fee every month. And they said they were one of two for a 6-floor requirement, by the way. And they told the tenant rep brokers, look, we can't do it. You need to go find an alternative because it just doesn't make sense for us to fund it.
The special servicer said that.
Yes.
Wow.
And what that's doing to the market as a whole is it's creating, so what used to be a competitive set, right? Like a tenant rep broker would go out and their tenant would say, I need 5,000 square feet. Show me which options can provide that. Well, used to, I mean, if you didn't have 10 plus on your list, you weren't doing it right. Now you go out in the market, I would argue it's cut in half if you're focused just on Class A, because if the space isn't move-in ready, you're going to have a landlord that can put money into it, that can pencil the deal, et cetera, et cetera. And that window is narrowing. So the real question is, what happens to the space that continues to be in the special servicer's hand? When does that get sold off and who buys it? Because let me tell you, the private investors are the only ones winning right now from an investment side. They're the only ones transacting.
Yeah. You know what that sounds like to me? It sounds like the metric for labor participation rate. Like we went into COVID and some people decided not to come back to work. Like they checked out, able bodies, but they're like, I'm not engaging in the workforce anymore. Our labor participation rate went down. And that sounds like what some of this office space is like, nope, we're checking out of the game. The space exists, it's there, but we're not participating in the game. And I wonder if there was some way to measure how much of the actual space is checked out and said, no, I'm not going back to work.
And I think it's almost what landlords have decided. It's easier for me to give the keys back than keep funding this sinkhole. Mm-hmm. Like an old house, right? Is it really worth continuing to try and band-aid the situation when long-term I'm not ever going to see the upside? Either I bought too high or I watched a major tenant fall out and I can't re-tenant it without significant capital. So all of this sort of stems, by the way, from flight to quality. In order to keep employees or even gain employees, you've got to have the best office on the block. And that used to be, you know, conferencing facilities, food facilities, fitness facilities. Now it's sort of taken on its own animal. That's a baseline, what I just mentioned. Now they want nearby residential, in addition to nearby hospitality, in addition to where's the nightlife, how far away is it from the trendy part of town to own a home? And where are, you know, most of what we're seeing in terms of activity is definitely still the larger oil and gas firms, but also, you know, financial. And law firms still want to be downtown, which is great for downtown. It needs it. But there's this push to make it a one-stop shop for the employee, whatever that looks like for them, retail, medical, fitness, et cetera. And that's what's winning.
Well, that goes back to a comment you made at the beginning of our conversation on the shift that's happened since COVID, because it used to be that the employees existed for the company. And now it seems like this shift is the companies exist for the employees, and they're much more concerned with what it will take to attract the quality of talent they need for them to be successful as a company. And you're talking about linkages, not just amenities in a building.
Totally. And that's a reason why it's not uncommon for the HR director to be on a tour. Certainly, if they're not on the tour, they're a part of the decision-making process. And it has become a driver within this market more and more, you know, focus on the employee, because, you know, much in the same way that the adage in our world is it's cheaper to keep a tenant than to re-tenant. The same is true for an employee. It's much easier and less expensive to keep an employee happy and on board than to just watch them walk away and think, oh, there's a graduate that can replace them. And you know, that maybe used to be true, but now with you know, the specialization of things and just, you know, growing work dynamic, right, between generations, you could point to that it's changing. But I'm going to go back to something you said, because I didn't answer it, and it's really important, and it's playing out right now in this city as part of our recent report that Transwestern released, or they're going to, is rents are rising. Now, the caveat to that is it's not every rent in every Class A building is going up. Because as I mentioned, some can't compete. So they're just kicking the can down the road, short-term renewals, limited TI, et cetera. But for those that can play, if you're not raising your rates, in my opinion, you're doing your landlords a disservice. So if you can play, and that's true for the Class A and the Class B market, although the Class A still is the most competitive. And in fact, there's fewer choices for tenants. What a tenant that could wait around to make a decision can no longer afford to do that, because the landlord will raise the price on you. I've been a part of one, which was interesting to say the least, but they aren't afforded. Time kills deals is a lovely adage that people like to say. I'm of the opinion that it can be friend or foe right now. And for landlord reps or landlords who can transact, it is your friend. Because if you can force the hand of a tenant, take advantage of it. Just in the same way the tenants took advantage of the soft market. So to me, the real question is, and this is one that's starting to play out a little bit, but I think we've only scratched the surface. What happens to the truly functionally obsolescent space in the office world? Every city has one. I mean, has it, right? And it's continuing to multiply. You know, luckily, we're not an Austin or a Silicon Valley or whoever else might be San Fran tech heavy, because they have, you know, given them the freedom to work the way they want. Although I think they've kind of said, wait, we need to put the toothpaste back in the tube and need you back in the office. And that was one thing that was unique about Houston. We were utilizing, that was the space utilization became a buzzword post COVID. We were the highest city and remain it, I believe, of space utilization across the U.S. So while we have maintained flexibility, we've also said, we need you here in the office. It doesn't work the collaboration and those collisions, the random collisions that would happen, are what spark ideas and ingenuity and, you know, ball rolling. And you can't do that in a Zoom environment. So still today, you see that. And I think that bred a stronger desire for employees to come back. And not only that, but to understand the benefit of it. Perhaps it was a mandate that was handed down that didn't seem as, they weren't as enthusiastic about. But on this side of it, I think that they understand the impact. And listen, it's a lot harder to get stuff done when you've got crying kid, barking dog, you name the distraction going on around you. And I think we were all ready to escape that at some point. That's my real query for this whole situation, is what do you do with that space? We're starting to see a little bit of it, which is kind of cool. I don't know what's happening in the Louisville market, but up by the airport here, the Bush Airport, our international one, kind of a rougher area and historically very high vacancy rates. In fact, their Class A vacancy is right around 50% right now. But the Class B has its own set of challenges because of where it's located in a floodplain, you know, next to apartments, et cetera. They're starting to tear down those low-rise office buildings and make industrial out of them. And how's that for a pro forma?
All you normally hear is, hey, we need more housing units, workforce housing. But it's mostly not feasible to do that with an office building, regardless of how functionally obsolete the space is. It just doesn't pencil to do it. So I'm very interested to see how you take, you know, to your question, what do we do with this obsolete space? What does it become that makes more sense for the market? And that's interesting to hear that it's becoming industrial around the airport in Houston, but that probably just makes the most sense on paper.
It does. And you know, what floors me when personally, I think that's a great adaptive reuse, or not even adaptive. I mean, you're just bulldozing it, but it's a reuse of the property, which tells you that obviously the dirt's more valuable than the actual building that sits on it. But it says to me volumes about where this city is going, because, I mean, we continue to be a logistics hub. Obviously, our port is strong, which helps us. But I just can appreciate that value's there, and we don't have to wait and let the building just get mothballed and fester and, you know, become just a haven for the untoward or whatever. It's nice to see that it's happening. Now, it doesn't always work. You know, there's been a couple of resi conversions, especially of high-rise buildings in downtown, and one here close in the Galleria that's been announced. Nothing is kicked off, which tells me, it goes back to your comment of, look, it's a great idea on paper. And certainly it would be a nice draw. Not every building works. And then secondarily to that, for, you know, a variety of mechanical reasons, but then secondarily to that, they can't make the numbers jive, even with all the incentives that are out there.
As you look forward a year, two, 3 years into the future, where do you think there will be opportunities for users of space, tenants, and investors? Like, where do you see, whether it's specific to Houston or just in the office market in general, when you have times like this where transactional velocity slows way down, where values actually take a hit, that ends up being, you know, some great opportunities for the next people in. So where do you see some of that as you, you know, look into your crystal ball into the future a couple of years?
I think what is going to be the next wave of investments to pop off is once the Class A, not only just trophy assets, but once that Class A, those flight to quality buildings, higher end, get filled up, your next in line are, you know, A minus, B plus. So the question is, how can you enhance those to be enough of a delta and yet still a draw for tenants? I don't know that, you know, I wouldn't be an advocate for making as much of an investment in those as you would a Class A, but how can you differentiate without totally blowing the budget, but capture this rent push that's not only being advertised, but tenants are buying into. How do you galvanize that? The other thing is, what we're seeing too is it's pockets of activity. So gallery has been really hot lately. Out west, when what we call our energy corridor, kind of West Chase area, has also been pretty hot. And the Woodlands continues to thrive for a variety of reasons, mostly centered around what Howard Hughes did in terms of, and continues to do in terms of, making it very much a work, live, play environment. But anywhere where you can really create, you know, that kind of synergy between work, live, play, or and keep your employees as close as possible to the office and that area that surrounds it, I think that's the winner. I think C-class properties probably should fall off. I don't think every submarket should probably have an office building, just being completely candid. And if you're bold enough as a user, I would suggest owning your own property. There's obviously, you know, I teach 103, you 102, and as part of 103, that is a very much, do I lease or do I buy? And I can throw numbers, anybody can throw numbers at a user all day on either side trying to push their case. But the reality is, there's so much more subjectivity involved in that decision than almost anything else in the real estate field, in the commercial side at least. And that's really where the rubber hits the road. And to me, if I were a user and I'm going to fill up, I don't know, at least a third of a building, own it. Unless there's just some terrible deferred maintenance that is just going to be money flushing for however long, go and make it your own and be the master of your own destiny. And you're seeing more, an increase of attractiveness from users for that. And I think that maybe that could be the answer to some of this glut. But I also have to disclaim that when I look forward, and I say this across the nation, we have to get used to a new normal in terms of vacancy. We're no longer going to see single digit vacancy. That's where my head's at. A stabilized, and I'm air quoting on my side, Bo. Right. And the stabilized occupancy, you know, used to be penciled at somewhere at, you know, 85, 90%. I think stabilized is 80. And I think if you're a landlord and you're above that, if you're not pushing rent, you are missing out. But the reality is, until something happens to those spaces, either bulldozed, user comes in, takes it offline, et cetera, we just have too much everywhere.
Well, Evelyn, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing with us your expertise and your passion about office. Good to hear somebody speak passionately about office. Thank you for your friendship and your time and for coming on.
Thanks for listening to the Commercial Investment Real Estate Podcast. Head to SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Join us next month for another episode of the Commercial Investment Real Estate Podcast, featuring another leading figure in the world of commercial real estate.